1, 2, 3, 4. Well, I'm rolling down the long, long summer way, smoking my breakfast by the pan, sitting by a river in the early morning sun. I watch a dream falling in the jam. Well, I turn the key, it starts right up, head on down the road. There's places that I've never been, stories ain't been told. Maybe my home's on the road. The road's the only place I feel at home. I don't know if I'm ever gonna get back again this way. The road's the only place I feel.
Hello and welcome to the My Home is on the Road show. My name is Dave Manning and I make my living going all over the American West playing music in bars and casinos and coffee shops and festivals and wherever will pay the bills. And I travel in Vincent, who is a 1965 Volkswagen microbus. And this week we've got another show about the 2009 Burning Man Festival, one of the biggest counterculture events of the year. And if you've been listening to the previous shows about Burning Man, you know all about it by now. But if this is the first one you've been tuning into, in brief, well, the only good way I've found to sum it up is that Burning Man is San Francisco's Mardi Gras in the desert. It takes place in a place called the Black Rock Desert, which is actually a completely dry lake bed, huge area in northern Nevada, one of the most remote places left in the lower 48 states. And the idea behind the festival is to essentially set up huge works of art and set up also a temporary city in the desert. And these huge works of art get built before the festival and during the festival, and at the end of it, most of them get burned to the ground in a big celebration. And some of the main ideas while you're living in what they call Black Rock City, a city that winds up being around 50,000 people attending this festival. But some of the main principles are that once you get into the gates of this festival, no money is exchanged. Everything is done on kind of a gift economy where you bring stuff to give away, and people give you stuff and you give away stuff to other people, and everyone just kind of gets along. And also, once you get in, there is no driving at all. The city's laid out in a kind of a C shape around the sculptures, and especially the man sculpture in the middle of the festival. And once you get in the gate, there's no driving your car around. Everything's done on bicycles and walking, with the exception of art cars, which are cars that have been highly, highly modified to the point that you can't even tell that they're cars anymore. I saw there's a double-decker bus that goes around that's made into a gigantic pirate ship, and there's I can't even get started on the varieties of art cars, but we're going to hear about one this week, because I stay in a place called Volkswagen Bus Camp, and there's a number of camps in the festival that are along different themes, and this year, Volkswagen Bus Camp actually managed to put together a art car card called Buszilla. So we're going to hear some from the creators of Buszilla on this show, and we're also going to tool around on the playa with some folks from VW Bus Camp and see what we might find at Burning Man 2009. So here we are. We're going to slide right back in, kind of where we left off last week, where we are underneath the man sculpture, right in the center of the Burning Man Festival on the second night of the festival.
So the whole tower structure, there must be at least a dozen legs that surround the man. Like, they look from a distance, they look like some sort of strange, gigantic tree roots. But when you get close, they're all made out of 2x4s. 2x4 sections, maybe about a foot and a half long each, all nailed together in this intricate way. And inside there's thicker wood. The whole thing is just made out of this raw lumber. And people have written things all over it. They're going to write over here, Right. What we were talking about earlier, this place is love. I'm going to ramble it on this board here. I just rode on Buszilla, the official art car of VW Bus Camp, which is it's two 70s vintage bay window buses. The first one is intact. The second one, the front end, just like the passenger and driver's seat, got cut off, and it is actually affixed with a special coupling. Like a city bus that is a wiggle worm bus that has kind of two buses long with the accordion thing in the middle, and it's fashioned like that with a kind of a dragon motif on the outside and all just cushions and couches on the inside for folks to ride in both the front bus and the back bus. And we just arrived at the temple, and the temple this year is, well, it's all kinds of plywood. It's very white, very light in color, but all kinds of plywood. And different sheets of, looks like the fine finished 1-inch plywood, all cut with different geometric designs. And there's a staircase that goes up to the second floor and the third floor up there. And there's pillars where the stairs go up that are hollow, and you can go inside them, these small little octagonal rooms, maybe about 6 foot across at the most. And there's an Asian girl, the one next to me, she's meditating, eyes closed. And others are looking around at things that are already written on the temple. The wind's blowing, it's sometime after midnight, and it's probably about 60 degrees, beautiful, beautiful night. Let's look for something written on the temple. A lot of open space so far. You plant a seed, you watch it grow, it dies at some point. Why bother, it says. Then again, what else do you do? Oh, that's beautiful. But still, why do you bother? You lose everything in the end. Why is that a tragedy? Right in the middle of a big cross shape, it says, breathe real deep. Then I realize there's nothing to worry about. There's a lot of blank real estate, a lot of places for people to tuck in. This must be the first night that the temple is open. There's lots of places people can roll up photographs and things and tuck them in here. We'll have to come back here later in the week. It's always good to be at the temple at dawn sometimes and see what it's like then, right when the sun's coming up. I've taken a few steps back from the temple. I want to describe some more of the scene. If you've never seen photographs or anything from Burning Man, there's no way you're going to be able to picture this. But the temple is there. It's kind of backlit and has kind of like indirect lighting. A lot of the shapes and features of it. And from a distance, it kind of looks like a torch cauldron of flame. And there's bicycles propped all around it with different kinds of blinking lights and glow sticks and L-wire all stuck to the bikes in different ways. A lot of bikes have big long antennas and flags sticking out the back. And two women just walked by, one with a long white fur coat and one with a kind of mid-length brown fur coat and big furry boots. And Buszilla's here, the two Volkswagen buses hitched together. And there's a art car shaped like a big red rocket with a amber rotating light in the front. Looks like there must be benches full of people in there. It's going by. There's a art car right across from me that's a geometric representation of a Triceratops dinosaur. And the legs and the face shield and the tail all light up in different colors of, or different shapes of red lights. And there's an art car over there shaped like another gigantic rocket ship with yellow and red and orange lights sticking out the back like the engines of the rocket. And in the distance, you can see the lights from the rest of the city. It's probably a good at least a quarter mile, if not half a mile away, where the city kind of rings around in its C shape around here. And there is a full-size, a real actual fire truck, except now it's rigged up as a party bus. So people can get in the back and kind of sit on the padded seats in the back, and where a normal fire truck would have a rotating, perhaps, turret fire hose on the top, this one has the same aperture, except it's shooting fire. So Brandon was saying, oh, well, finally, a fire truck that shoots fire. Something that makes sense.
I got to sit down with the creators of Buszilla. It's a young couple out of Oregon that made this art car and brought it down to the Black Rock Desert in northern Nevada. So let's go to some parts of that interview right now.
My name is Heather Wolt.
And I'm Brandon Mathis.
Okay. And my play name is Gigi. Stands Gigi. For Girl Genius. Mary Lou named me.
Girl Genius. Awesome.
In 06, my first year, Damon and I had talked about making a Polly Pocket van that goes from the front to the back and opens up. We had initially talked about it, but because Damon lives in Olympia and I was in Portland, it was just like not really gonna happen. And for the fact that when I redid the website, I actually found some sketches from the art car and I started brainstorming. Originally, we were going to do a double decker, and then we realized that it would be pretty top heavy, wouldn't be able to fit that many people, so we were talking about stretching it, and then came up with the articulator.
How many hours do you think you have in this?
Almost every other weekend, starting in November when I got that bus, the back bus, and then starting from about April is when we actually started doing some serious structure. So at that point, it was every weekend.
And then June, it was connected for the regional burn in Portland.
So only the structure was done, and I just threw some pieces of carpet in there, so it wasn't like straight floor.
And after that, it was just whole board to get it finished.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. And then summer.
Yep.
And then initially you got it out here, and then got the reject.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Tell me about that evening.
So what we had done is we took it down to the DMV, and almost immediately I think I could tell that they were not going to accept us.
Okay, I just got to jump in here and say that the DMV that they're talking about is not the Department of Motor Vehicles like you might have in your state. It's actually the Department of Mutant Vehicles like they have at Burning Man. So every art car, before it's allowed to drive around the playa, has to get registered down at the Department of Mutant Vehicles and get approved, and they get a bumper sticker with an individual number on it, so kind of like a license plate that goes on the back of the art car. And they get approved once for the daytime use and a separate approval process for nighttime use.
And so essentially he said that it looked too much like a Volkswagen bus, and even though I told him that in my application it said that it specifically was going to have a standard Volkswagen front end, because it was the evolution of a Volkswagen bus, and he also said that it didn't have any wow factor, which was really, really weird, because pretty much everywhere we went, people would go, wow, cool, awesome, yeah.
People would actually say wow.
Yeah, people actually did. I mean, the wow, first person that we passed that actually exclaimed was their exact words were, wow, that thing's amazing.
Yeah.
Kind of an odd irony, but.
So we had, took the long way home from the DMV and ended up talking with a few people, and they were like, yeah, you should do a petition, and they actually started it for us. Got a piece of paper, and she put her name on it, and a bunch of other people stopped by, and we got two pieces of paper full within not even half an hour, 45 minutes or so. And so then we got excited again and came back and found materials for the front end, for the jaw, you know.
Yeah, just out of nowhere, like somebody else's camp. Somebody said, oh, they got this thing, and they got this other thing.
Yeah, and then on our way back, we picked up some supplies from various people, fabrics and whatnot. And Damon gave us some conduit pieces, and we had some pipe.
From his dome. Actually took apart his dome.
So we built a better mouth and worked on the tail.
We put three hula hoops size, you know, they got smaller, inside the tail. Because it really needed some more girth. It didn't have... So, and I knew that that was the one item that I didn't think was completely finished. But I also wanted to just kind of get through the DMV, and now I realize that that's not where to go. But he also, so when we went back, we had talked to Sparky, and he was also a previous member of Community Bus Camp. So
all right.
He had camped here before and had a Eurovan. So he said, I have a soft spot for boat shines, and I can also tell that he looked at everything. The first guy didn't look at anything. Sparky actually looked inside, talked to us about the electric motor, talked to us how he built it, and how it wasn't a trailer, but it was a permanent, you know, modification. And he saw that we had done a lot of work to it. So he thought that one of the other reasons we got approved is the participation factor.
Yeah, we definitely put a lot of people in there, which you did.
Yes, we told him 18, and we got just about 30 in there.
almost twice as many.
Yeah.
Which makes a big difference, especially when you compare it to about half the art cars out there, a four-person car, a three-person car,
a five-person car.
You know, a base like that. But it's not quite as big as, like, the mega cars that hold, you know, 50 or something. So, small feel, but lots of space.
They actually, Walter, the world's largest Volkswagen bus, the Splitty.
Oh, yeah.
They said they had about 40 people, and that was their max.
Oh, right. And that thing's a fire truck.
Yeah, it's based on a fire truck chassis.
So, for our size, we fit a lot of people in there.
And how was it driving around, you know, being the engineer, and like being, you know, I don't know, do you have titles here in our car pilot?
We just kind of took on the titles of builders. Heather, myself, and I were drivers. Heather, myself, and Annie were drivers.
That must have been a good night.
Yeah. No, we were, so the three of us did driving. It pretty much just drove like a regular bus. It's heavy, but... Or heavy when it's fully loaded, 30 people, 150 pounds each, 200 pounds each, definitely adds up, but it stops and goes, and worked really well. I mean, we ended up really not using a ton of fuel, and if we'd had the electric drive going, it would have been even less, I mean, probably half, so.
Oh, right.
Especially, there was a plan, although it never folded out, just because we kind of ran out of time to do. There was a camp here that was going to allow us to use their power, their solar power, so to charge our battery pack.
All right.
Yeah, it's better to be safe and make sure we've, you know, for next year we'll definitely have the electric drive as, you know, 90% of drive time. It just didn't have time to really fully test it and have it done. But the other thing that was interesting was that as the person who had the responsibility for the vehicle, that because it's under my name on the DMV, that regardless of who drives it, and if somebody hits a van, or they hit that, or some the driver hits somebody, or a bike, or runs into something, I'm responsible for it, no matter who it is.
All right.
So that was one of the reasons why we didn't really have many other people drive.
That makes sense, yeah.
But we stayed sober, and I actually think I had more fun being sober on those nights that we'd stay up all night, because then I didn't get the, get the sleepies.
So any memories that stick out in your head, like, as far as, like, your tours around? Any highlights?
Well, we actually, probably most memorable was the one time we did break down. in front of somebody's camp. They thought it was pretty freaking awesome that we brought basically an hour and a half worth of partying to their camp, and they were, you know, they weren't even expecting anybody to stop by. They just had like a piece of cardboard with their camp name in front of them. So, but we hung out and played music for a while. It's fairly surprising. Just about everywhere we went, we'd get people walking up, checking it out. I don't think there was, I think most everyone appreciated it, whether they wrote it or not, just checking it out. Mm-hmm. And I think the only night we ever had to turn anybody down was last night for the temple burn, because we were just so overpacked.
I did turn a couple people down when we had the mass.
The 30 in it. Yeah.
That's pretty obvious then.
Yeah, there's no room, sorry people, but I'd like to be a little more organized for next year. You know, things like a reader board for the front of the bus, so we can have kind of art tour information or where we're going, or
oh yeah, like a city bus,
like here's where it's going.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be freaking great. Yeah. It'd be great if our cars had this. You had like some general, like maybe idea where they might be going. Mm-hmm. We can get on eventually.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so the reason I think that's a great idea is because the problem and the joy at the same time of getting on an art car while you're at Burning Man is that you never know where you're going to wind up. You get on the art car, and the party's going on, the music's cranking, and you sit down somewhere in some conversation, and then you look up, and you might not know where you are. You might be way on the other side of the city. You might be way out in the deep playa away from the city, and it might be a long walk home. Could be about a 2-mile walk home if you're not careful where you'll wind up.
And even
that'd be great.
Yeah, I mean,
catching our car at 9 o'clock.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. That one's going to 6.
And have more of a schedule, you know, and have maybe some drivers that are trained for it.
Yeah.
And that we trust driving know how to drive something with a trailer.
Cool. Well, I definitely appreciate you guys putting all that effort in.
Thank you.
Yeah, it is fun. It'll be nice to bring it back again.
Cool. Yeah, we have a lot of ideas for next year. And one more thing I'd like to add is probably one of my most favorite kind of things about the bus is the fact that people who have heard my speech, and I tell people about it, and I tell people about what it is, people have heard my speech, and other people ask them. I actually really like seeing their eyes light up so they can tell them about the vehicle, and they get excited about it, and that they can say, you know, I was part of crew, or, you know, I helped on it, or I participated. And even if I sit there and I actually kind of discreetly watch people doing it, because I thought it was great.
Oh, yeah,
so,
yeah.
One of my favorite parts.
Yeah, the disciples of Bustilla.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a wide range of people help with this, from rangers to staff people to camp people to non-camp people, so a lot of just random people. We'll probably never recuperate our costs, but I think the donations we got really helped, especially with lighting and stuff. So
it definitely helped us get our night license.
Yeah.
Because the lights were very bright. You could see them really, really far away.
Oh, I did. There's several times where I'm like, Marcella's way over there.
Yeah.
We can't run over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the goal. They get extremely bright, so there's no question. And the night license wasn't even an issue. I mean, we went in for our daytime debacle after talking with Sparky. He was like, I would give you your night license right now just because this is so bright. It's safely lit. The ground's lit underneath of it.
Oral orgasm confirmed.
But, turned out well.
You have to give yourself an oral orgasm.
I love this voice.
Requires great flexibility.
What's going on? I hear that.
And stamina.
All right, and so, like most serious conversations end at Burning Man, someone comes around bringing shots. So there we go. That was our talk with Brandon and Heather, the creators of Buszilla. And they do have a pretty significant presence on the web. So if you just, the easiest way is just go ahead and Google Buszilla, Buszilla. That's the way to find them and see some great pictures and even some videos from inside Buszilla. We're going to rejoin the folks traveling traveling in Basila now, out on the playa, just as we're about to get to the gigantic Rubik's Cube.
All right, so we're standing by a gigantic Rubik's Cube. It's got to be about at least a 20 or 30 foot cube suspended by its corner. Like, the corner is pointing down, another corner, the opposite corner is pointing up, about 10 feet off the ground. And there's people on platforms all around it. And I think somehow they are controlling where the lights go. So as a cooperative effort between three different people, they have to try and solve the Rubik's Cube by pushing different buttons on their controllers as they stand on podiums. And once in a while they shout to each other, like looking for strategy. And we'll see if we can hear the sound of the cube shifting, the noise it makes.
Okay, so what we're doing right now, we're trying to solve the Rubik's Cube, and we figure the only way we can do it is if we get three of us to work as a team, and one guy does the solving work. It is! Solved it. Actually, Mike solved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good job, man.
Yes. And now the Rubik's Cube is lighting up and glowing. Oh, and now it's spinning random lights. It's mixing itself up again.
So there was the gigantic Rubik's Cube solved before our eyes way out in the playa at Burning Man. And as you heard kind of fading out there, the folks from Rubik's Cube Camp are getting together. And it's just one of those, well, of course, there's a Rubik's Cube Camp, because there's different theme camps at Burning Man for just about everything you can think of. My name is Dave Manning, and you've been listening to the My Home is on the Road show. As I mentioned earlier, for more information about Buszilla, if you want to see some pictures, some videos from inside Buszilla at Burning Man, the best way to do it, they have a few different places where they come up on the web. So I hate to say it, but the best way to do it is just Google Buszilla, Buszilla, and you can find some info there. In the background this week, we're hearing some tracks from the musical Drum Key, who does not have a presence on the web, at least last time I searched for him. I do, though. And my presence on the web is at www.davemanning.net. DaveManning.net is where you can hear some of my music and subscribe to the podcast, hear the radio show every week, or the whole thing is cataloged there off the website, so you can go and listen to any episode you want at your convenience. Next week, I was planning on continuing with Burning Man, but I have realized I'm going to be in transit flying over the Atlantic Ocean and have a number of things to take care of before that happens. So I'm going to put on a rerun next week. I'm going to rerun the dish scrubbing show, which I've got some good feedback on, some great music to just kind of chill out to next week. And then the week after, I'll be able to put on a show, the continuation of Burning Man. You'll find out why I wound up flying across the Atlantic. It all started there under the Cubitron. at Burning Man. And I want to give a big thank you to Groundswell Media Productions and Nathan and the whole staff there for putting my website together. Really appreciate their hard work. But the problem is with Nathan, you know, there's just some things I ask him to do that he just flat refuses to do.
You have to give yourself an oral orgasm.
All right, safe travels and have yourself a fantastic day. Maybe you're home.